Hi, I'm Carolyn Elliott.
And I'm Layla Bernard.
And we're here on my back porch with Layla and Rory today.
Hi.
Rory's here. And you're listening to the Sleepover podcast. So this morning, I've been thinking a lot about the animus and the anima. I'm reading Barbara Hannah's book, The Animus, The Spirit of Inner Truth in Women. And I've just been thinking a lot about it, you know, because I wrote Existential Kink, which is like a whole book on shadow integration. And I feel like there's a burgeoning popular understanding of that, that you have to like take ownership of
everything that you think you're not.
Everything that you, all these, you know, shady qualities you project onto other people and, you know, desires that you were, you know, have habitually refused to own. And I feel like that's, people are starting to get that. But I feel like there is still absolutely zero understanding in mass consciousness of what it takes to differentiate oneself from the animus or the anima. Because, and that took me a long time to really grok that, is that it's shadow integration and it's animus, anima, differentiation. Because the anima and the animus possess you.
Yes.
And, you know, the shadow is like sort of like stuff that you specifically avoid.
Right. It is in its essence something that you are habitually differentiated from. Mm-hmm. And so to achieve the reconciliation of opposites, you have to integrate with your shadow. But the anima animus is something that like is completely possessing your consciousness and making you think it's you or you're it. So you are already integrated with it and you have to like pull yourself and your actual self apart from that.
Yeah. And, I'm glad we have Rory here because I know he's done like a Jungian, coach training and has spent a lot of time thinking and working with his anima. Obviously I don't have direct personal experience with that. So there's a lot of different things that I'm interested in relation to this whole notion. So I was just telling Layla that I'm thinking about like writing a follow-up book. And just like there's various ideas swirling around for me because on the one hand, I think the distinction that Jung makes between the anima and the animus is really interesting. You know, he says there's a contrasexual other and it appears as opposite to whatever the person's biological sex is. And, you know, it serves certain functions, and specifically he associates the anima in men with the soul and with eros, or like the relating function. And he says that
the
men,
emotional relating, tender function.
Yes. And he says that men, you know, tend to, see that as a woman's thing or a feminine thing. And then likewise for women, he says that the animus is the spirit or the mind in women and that
logos.
It's the logos. So it's the, so eros being about like the urge to come together and logos being more like the urge to distinguish and divide and like separate this from that and, make distinctions. And, But so there's that, and that's like how very interesting Jungian writers, like obviously Jung himself and Marie-Louise von Franz and Barbara Hanna will talk about the anima and the animus. But I do, since I am a born heretic, I do struggle with these heretical thoughts that I have about it, which is like primarily that I'm like, is it really so distinct though? Because, you know, like another thing is like even, I feel like Jung differed at many points in his writing as to like how distinct all these figures really are. Like sometimes he would talk about the shadow as being very distinct from the anima or animus. Sometimes he would say like, well, they can be married. The anima or the animus can be completely contaminated with the shadow. They could appear, you know, in all sorts of different ways and dreams.
Well, it seems clear to me just from hearing you say this that, like, we in our own, you know, I-ness personality have ourself and our shadow, but then we also contain this inner other who probably has a self and a shadow. So there's really, like, four beings.
Well, right. Well, so, yeah. So he does say that the anima or the animus always has a dual aspect. It's always both completely positive and completely negative.
Mm-hmm.
And that both are present all the time. So pretty much what you were just saying. And, okay, so there's that. And then there's also, like, I wonder, like, is it really so different in men and women? Because, for example, I certainly have feminine figures in my dream, in my dreams, and I feel like, those would get classified as either shadow figures or self-archetypal figures, depending on various valences with them, because I myself have lady parts. But I'm like, well, is a self-archetype really so different from an anima archetype in a man? Like, for example, if I dream of Mary Magdalene, and, you know, she's coming and she's giving me some sort of beautiful healing message, how exactly is that different from a man dreaming about Mary Magdalene and she's giving him a beautiful healing message? Like, somehow that's supposed to be his anima, but that's myself just because my physical body is female. I don't really understand that. Like,
well, so it sounds like you're suggesting that all people contain an anima and an animus that are, like, imprinted from a collective and personal experience of, like, the archetypal feminine and the archetypal masculine. And if you are identified as, like, I am a feminine person, then what would be your anima is kind of yourself, but really it's just this feminine archetype. And if you are a man, you're, like, you would have a animus, but it's yourself, but really you're containing both of them.
Yes, you're containing both of them. And obviously, like, I think culture has become much less polarized than it was, right, in Jung's day, in the sense that, right, for a long time, it was that women were heavily discouraged from intellectual or creative professional pursuits and, like, heavily supposed to just be at home and doing relationships with children and family. And these days, that's, like, totally not the case in modern society. There's, like, women are really, you know, prevalent in academia and very, like...
Well, and I'm just going to riff here a little bit, that it seems like I recall reading, you know, in some Jungian-type analysis of women that, like, in the past, when women were more supposed to be, like, manifesting and embodying the, like, purer or, like, more... yeah, heterodox femininity, that, like, women who were super intelligent and very creative and, like, wanted to have this, like, impact in the world that's, like, very masculine would, like, sort of be characterized as having, like, an overactive masculine, an overactive animus that's, like, possessing them. And I could see where, if that was the kind of society that you were living in, your animus, who was very powerful in you, this, like, intellectual part, would become, like, rageful and angry and, like, destructive because of the inability for that to be expressed when you're trying to live within, like, the social confines.
Yes, and I would love to keep talking about that more later. I wanted to read a little definition of so what we've already said is one little heretical way that I question the distinction. And I also just to get into more of my, so I want to talk later about how I other things that make me really like the distinction, but I want to just talk a little bit more about stuff that makes me question it. So I'm just going to read, this is a little quote from Barbara Hanna, The Spirit of Inner Truth in Women, The Animus, The Spirit of Inner Truth in Women, page 2. So she, I'm just going to read a paragraph here. She says, "By the term animus, I understand the masculine spirit or unconscious mind of woman. Emma Jung pointed out recently that one should differentiate very carefully here between the anima and the animus. The anima, as is well known, is Jung's term for the feminine soul of man. But it is really a contradiction in terms to speak of the animus as the masculine soul of woman. This error was made in the early days of Jungian psychology and still often is done today. In Latin, the word animus means intellect, memory, consciousness, character, and spirit. It is often equated with mind and is also used to mean courage, vivacity, bravery, and will. In Jungian psychology, it is used primarily to denote the phenomenon of spirit in women and the contrast between the feminine soul, anima, and the masculine spirit, animus. gives us a valuable hint as to the difference between these two figures. And then there's a little quote. Well, maybe we could get, there's a whole bunch of little quotes that I feel like it just says, but just that paragraph gave me pause because, I feel like the way that spirit and soul, like, first of all, there's nowhere in Jung that I can find a clear distinction where he's saying, this is what I mean by spirit versus this is what I mean by soul. And all, we know that Jung was heavily influenced by Hermeticism and, alchemy and Platonism. And in those, we, you know, really the, what I feel like I learn about the meaning of spirit versus soul is actually quite similar to the way that Dr. Robert talks about it, which is that spirit is like the vast, all-pervasive consciousness with no distinct qualities that is, you know, everywhere and nowhere. And, that the soul is the bridge to that, is, you know, the bridge and the individual to that infinite consciousness, and that the soul, so the way that that's confusing for that paragraph that we just read is that in the understanding that I would usually take from alchemy, Hermeticism, Dr. Robert stuff, is that the soul is where the memory, the will, the, you know, the intellect, the character are located.
Right.
So I don't see how we could possibly say that, like, yeah, I don't understand the distinction that's being made here between spirit and soul. I feel like it's not one that stands up to use in the larger context of, the metaphysical or religious thought. It's like, it's sort of like a random conglomeration of
some lying words.
Yes.
It's different labels that purport to mean something different, but like what?
Yeah.
What?
Exactly. And so like I lean towards thinking about that both the anima and the animus,
the inner others
have to do with the meaning-making function. And, whereas I can see that there is a distinction in emphasis in the kind of meaning-making that happens in Eros, which is the desire to come together, the desire to unite, and the sort of meaning-making that happens in Logos, which might be more about differentiating and like, you know, distinguishing things from one from another. They're both forms of meaning-making.
Right.
And it seems that both archetypal figures, anima and animus, as they appear in people's dreams and as they influence us in daily life, have to do with possessing or taking over our meaning-making ability.
Right.
And then, you know, creating various distortions that can be, you know, maladaptive or ultimately unhappy experiences. And what I do think is very interesting, though, is that I do actually agree with the distinction that Jung talks about, and here is, I just have my Barbara Hanna book handy. So the distinction about how it manifests in men versus women. So she goes on, this is the same page, page 2. In general, we can say that at the more rudimentary levels, the animus in the woman is the producer of opinions, whereas the anima in man produces moods. But actually, the part of the animus to which we can react and with which we can make contact is the merest fraction of the entity of spirit in the woman. Yeah, that's... So basically, this theme of when animus possession manifests in women, the way that it manifests is in these very sort of like rigid, dogmatic, high-flown opinions, which are sort of like not precisely apropos to the situation at hand, but are like a little bit off, feel a little bit dissociated or weird, and can be very annoying to listen to.
Yeah.
And I feel like I have experienced that multiple times with myself and with my women friends, where, you know, like, they'll be seized. It's like they're seized by some thought. And often the thought can be very, like, self-critical or very critical of others. Or, like, this is the way things should be. Things should be like this. blah, 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 blah. And you could almost hear the sort of like, it's like an old man is talking. It's like some like weird, shitty old man is talking. And indeed, that's what Jung says. It's like an inferior sort of man. It's almost as if the woman is possessed by an inferior sort of man. You can sort of just imagine some like Reddit troll sitting in his mom's basement, like spewing the same sort of like creeds about how this is the way things should be. And likewise, the manifestation of anima possession in men characterized by like these sort of like irrational moods and like petty vanities that will come up, or jealousies or insecurities, as being like, you know, what the inferior sort of woman might do. So like,
right,
somebody who spends their entire life looking at Instagram models and comparing themselves to them.
Yeah. And feeling like, kind of like insecure and like needy.
Yeah.
And like, yeah.
And so, but then again, since both, because these both manifest in people of both sexes, it's, the distinction starts to break down. It's like, well, is that really a quality of inferior sorts of women that men happen to manifest? Or is that just an inferior quality of humanity that manifests? Likewise, the same possession with like the rigid opinions. Is that really an inferior masculine? I don't know.
Well, I think it's exactly what you're saying, the latter.
Yeah.
And I think where it gets confusing, like, I've been reading The Chicken Kabbalah, and one of the things I really liked from that is he's kind of like, we're using duality to talk about this thing, but don't get confused. Mm-hmm. So I think using masculine and feminine can be helpful, but when it gets too much into like women, like literal biological women and men, especially now compared to Jung's day, it feels less accurate. So I would say it's more of a pervasive quality that we're just using terms, like we could just as easily use like yin and yang.
Yeah. Or, you know, if a woman is in like a shitty, insecure mood and like being pouty and bitchy, couldn't we say that she's anima possessed? Like, why couldn't she be anima possessed? Or like a guy who's like riding his high horse of like weird dogmatic opinions, why couldn't he be animus possessed?
Right.
You know, like the classical Jungians would probably say, oh, well, they're, you know, they're being taken over, they're identified with their shadow, or they're shadow possessed. But it's like, okay, sure. But it's just, there's something unconscious is happening in them. And anyways, so I'm just debating this within myself because I'm trying to figure out the angle from which I want to write. Mm. Like, do I want to use these distinctions, or do I want to like create some sort of, you know, inner other category that is different than these regular Jungian distinctions?
Well, it seems interesting to me to like maybe start from being like, every person is in truth a hermaphrodite. And every person contains an anima and an animus. Mm-hmm. And they both can possess the self, because the true self is utter emptiness and nothingness and pure potential. And so it's really only a trick of, you know, where our locus of identity in this moment lies, that we're like, well, I'm a woman, so I have an animus and a self, or I'm a man, so I have an anima and a self. But like, really deep down, you're both and neither, and you've got the anima and the animus, and either of them could possess you, either of them could be dysfunctional or working well, and it's really just, you've got both, and which one do you prefer to manifest more?
Yeah, I like that. So I'm leaning in the direction of that, and but one way that I'm excited about this project, and that I think it's really meaningful, is that I can't, I don't know how to speak exactly for anima possession in men, but, or whatever that is, but I know that like the classically described animus possession and projection has affected me in my relationships a whole lot. Like I have had, like, I have this like monstrous, like tyrant, like super negative animus figure. And if my partner speaks to me, if David speaks to me with like a tone of irritation, like nothing terrible, like nothing objectively terrible, but just he just gets impatient or irritated. Like, I hear this like monstrous, evil, destroying tyrant, and I get super upset and I feel super unloved, and I feel justified in like being crazy town, mean and pouting and like whatever. I have this whole thing. And I mean, I've worked on it a lot and it's a lot better than it used to be, but like.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting because like I've seen this dynamic where like, yeah, I hear how like when you project your animus, like your negative animus gets projected onto another person, then you, as a lady person who's projecting your animus, the negative, nasty, tyrannical, critical, bastard animus onto your partner, you, as a woman, start to get into your negative anima. You become possessed by your negative anima, who's like, how could you say that to me? That is so wrong! And like needy and moody and wild. And I've seen it, you know, and I've seen it also be that like when a woman is animus possessed, where she's being hypercritical and like bastardly and like judgmental and mean, then it elicits in her male partner a very moody, anima possessed, hurt, sad, you know, whimpering lady person, kind of like little girl thing. So like I feel like the inner others are like constantly interacting, and it really, you can project or be possessed by, and that will elicit the projection or possession of your other.
That's, I like that. I think that's really well said. Yeah, great. You're really helping me flesh out this book, Layla. Thank
you. You're welcome. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I've been talking for a long while. I'm interested to hear your thoughts, Rory, about your experiences. Do you feel like you do anima projection, or like?
I think that I do anima identification.
Possession.
Like, possession. Yeah, that is very familiar to me. And I mean, when you were Layla, what you were just saying, I was like, oh, that was so much of my last relationship. The like, her being the animus and me being the anima in like the negative way, you know, I was like, okay, I see that. And what I feel like the anima possession for me, and this is funny because I've also been having conversations about like the toxic feminine, and it's like this hidden, overly critical, like it's so similar to the voice I hear in my own head when I'm like, oh, it's anima possession. Of like both like hypercritical and like you're not man enough and kind of like breaking down into like an overwhelming torrent of just like not good enough, while at the same time being like, well, come on, like where are the men? Aren't you gonna be a man? And like it's this interesting push-pull of like hypercriticism that's like an inward collapse is how I've experienced it. While at the same time, on top of that, criticism for the just having that experience and not like meeting it. And I think what's really interesting, you know, when I did my Jungian coach training, they did talk a little bit about this, but I very early on was also like, but wait, don't I also have an animus? Like they made the distinction of where your ego, like I, identification lies. So since I identify as a man, that would mean I have an anima. But I really feel it like it's more like I have both. And I could even divide it up more into four and be like yin masculine, yin feminine, yang feminine, and like work with that. But I think one of the most interesting things is how much my anima shows up in my dreams. And like before I moved to Pittsburgh, I was having a lot of dreams where women, some showing up as people I actually knew, some as just total dream characters, were like trying to get me to have sex with them. And I was like, no, like I'm with Layla. But I think my inner anima was like hugely jealous of Layla. So I think there is this like thing that can happen where it's, to me, it feels really important that we develop a relationship with that part of ourselves. And if we don't, if it stays unconscious and we kind of put all of it onto our lover, then that part can end up feeling really neglected.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like that's definitely true. And I feel like that's one of the classical experiences also that Jung talks about with that, both the anima and the animus. I'm remembering specifically more the animus discussion, but like there's a whole discussion of the story of Sarah and Tobit and the demon Asmodeus, where there's this bride somewhere in the Old Testament. She gets married. I guess it's, is it the Book of Tobit? Maybe it's apocryphal. It might be apocryphal. Anyways, she gets married like 7 times, and 7 times, like the demon Asmodeus, like kills the guys, like basically will not let the wedding be consummated. And I think it takes the appearance of the angel Raphael to sort things out and make the demon go away. But that, you know, Jung talks about how one of the functions of the animus is like wants to keep the woman for himself, and like has a very divisive and like very like will like zero in on like every flaw with a man, like project the worst of the of itself of the animus onto the man, will, you know, and I think about that a lot lately, you know, in part because like the divorce rate is so high these days, and there's more, for example, in America, in the US, there's like more single women than ever before, so I guess analogously single men too. And that people are just having a really hard time relating to each other.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, part
and if
of
as it, within, so without, that's because you're having some difficulty relating to your inner other in a healthy function.
Indeed, indeed. And so I'm really interested in this because I'm interested in, you know, I feel like I've been in this process for a long time of like taking note of my dreams, like noticing what sort of masculine figures are appearing in my dreams. And it seems, it's interesting to me because I feel like there's places where Jung talks about it as if there's some sort of like linear progression in a woman's animus figure, as if it starts out as being like Tarzan guys or like a bunch of soldiers or like a mean old tyrant, and then it evolves into being Hermes, like, you know, or something. But I have definitely encountered Hermes in my dreams, and then I've had terrible, scary mobster murder tyrants, and then I've had, you know, like it's quite clear to me that both the, I guess, the very positive and the very negative animus figures are present at once within me. And I think one of the things that's most positive, I guess, about the Hermes figure is he teaches me about integrating and balancing, differentiating with the negative one. But real quick, Layla, is Lulu still playing contentedly in there? Okay, cool. We have Lulu and Brucey are here with us. What was I thinking? Oh, yeah.
The linear progression. Yeah. The coexisting of the positive
just not
and negative.
But it's, yeah, it's like, linear. It's like totally not linear. And, yeah, it seems to be like very day to day. Like I noticed for a while, like I had a beautiful reprieve of like 4 months from like my crazy body image issues. And I was even telling Layla how enlightened I was and everything. I was like, yeah, I'm just so free of like judging my body. And then like the thoughts, I noticed like the thoughts started to come back and it started to be like looking in the mirror and like feeling really judgmental of myself. And like that night I had a dream that I was with like one of my crazy psycho ex-boyfriends, and he was like, had like hijacked a car that we were in and was like driving like super scary fast on all of these like mountain windy roads and like threatening me and all of stuff. And I had to like seek sanctuary in a church away from this like crazy guy. And I woke up from that dream and I was like, oh, that dream is telling me that these critical thoughts about my body are not me. They are this like crazy town negative animus that I have.
Who's thrown you in his car and is taking you on a hell ride.
Yeah. He's not worth listening to. We don't like that guy.
Hijack your will.
Yeah.
Just hijack your will.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And, you know, and the next night I had a dream with like a much more like positive interaction with a man. There was like a sweet sort of nerdy guy who was trying to like court me and date me. I was like, that's better. That's better than the psycho ex.
That's my favorite kind of guy.
And so, Yeah, so it seems to be more like a day-to-day thing, at least like what my dreams reflect. And, hey, Lulu, you can come join us out here. Lulu's kind of hobbling around because she's in a cast. Rory, do you think you might be able to help her walk down the little step? Yeah, she sadly hurt her leg in a trampoline accident. What was I thinking about? The animus. So I've been in this like big ongoing dialogue and process with the animus because I started noticing just like how dramatically the dreams really do give me information about like what my meaning making function is doing, like what my mind is doing. And especially when I have dreams about David and he's doing something offensive, I've gradually learned that that's not just my mind telling me how offensive David is. It's informing me, like, what my negative constellation of him, you know, is. Anyways, I guess I could keep rambling on it. But I feel like the reason why I'm wanting to start really clarifying my ideas and, like, writing a book and a follow-up to Existential Kink... Hold on, honey. Mommy's talking. Is because I feel like it has made a big difference, a big positive difference in our relationship for me, you know, in my relationship to David and in my relationship to myself, to do this differentiation work and to be able to see with the help of my dreams, like, oh, these things, you know, are not Carolyn. These are these unconscious parts of me that are trying to help me in some funny way. That I need to give love and attention to, and I need to see their innocence, and I need to integrate them. And, you know, like the TDM processes from Dr. Robert are like really super helpful for that. And I feel like actually more helpful in many ways than just like, you know, like Jung recommended active imagination, having dialogues with the parts, which is great, but like,
if you don't have a constructive dialogue, then why talk?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's interesting. It seems like there's this act of differentiation that's like the first necessary thing, and then some level of integration, or maybe even like repurposing.
Or like romancing, and like making peace with and coming into healthy relationship with, and like seeing the virtue of, and like seeing the good, praising the good.
Yeah, I've found, like, the things I'd be most interested in and curious about, especially, like, reading a book, would be, how to identify when it happens, and then how to work with it when it comes up, you know, and how to develop a good relationship. And I've found, like, just today, I was realizing, like, oh, my anima part seems to be happiest when I'm doing something creative. Like, when I'm in the creative flow, that's nourishing for that part. That helps that part like chill out and calm down a little bit more. I've noticed it can also be tricky to, even when I notice I'm in that possession of sort of the negative, harmful aspect of it, to actually know what to do to really step out of that. Because sometimes it's happening, and I know it's happening, and I'm like, oh my God, I can't get away from it. But I know of so many men who have this exact same thing, like terrible self-criticism that's debilitating and then really infecting like their relationship with their partner and creating a lot of like needy, emotionally codependent patterns. Yeah.
Yeah, well, so this is where I start to wonder again about even saying that both men and women have an anima and an animus. This is where I start to wonder again about, I don't know, because I feel like that critical function that you're describing that you would associate with anima possession, I mean, that same very critical self-criticizing function is what's associated with animus possession.
Right.
And, you know, certainly, so it's like, I'm like, well, does just everybody just get themselves down in the same way? You know, we get possessed by the same, by very similar critical part, and does it really matter? But if that part has a feminine or a masculine valence to it, I mean, I guess though there is something to, like the idea of like our collective idea of masculinity and our collective idea of femininity, and the anima and animus being like, you know, portals or representations of those, of our relationship to those collective archetypes. I guess there is that. So anyhow, this is how I confuse myself and delay the writing of this book.
Yeah. Well, it's tricky.
Mommy, Bruce kicked me.
Yeah. It didn't seem exactly like a kick. It seemed more like a movement of the foot. But I hear you. You didn't like it.
Well, we've got our little representations of anima and animus in their pure form right here in front of us.
Yes. Yeah, well, so, but I, like, but I can definitely hear you about how, like, that inner critical dialogue is what causes the moodiness, right? Where else would that moodiness and touchiness and insecurity come from?
Right.
Okay, he did kick you, and you didn't like it, and it was wrong, and perhaps you want him to be punished. Would punishment satisfy you?
Mm-mm.
No. Would justice, some form of regenerative justice?
Do you want him to say I'm sorry?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Brucey.
Brucey's watching cartoons. It might be hard to get him to say I'm sorry. Well, how about we get him to say I'm sorry after we stop recording this podcast, Lulu? Is that okay? No? Okay.
well, justice will be served.
Okay. Well, where were we? Oh, yes, the inner critical thoughts. And so that's what you would be most interested in a book would be about... Okay, well, it seems...
What to do when you're possessed.
Yeah, great question.
And recognizing the possession, and then what do you do once you're like, oh, I'm in possession of this thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm also curious about, you know, do you think of it as separate, myriad separate figures of, like, positive anima, negative anima? Or is that one figure that just shows up in different ways depending on how you've been relating to it?
Yeah, great question. I guess I feel like we should maybe get to offering that in the next iteration, in the next podcast episode, because the Lulu has become implacable.
The niblets require attention.
All right, implacable Lou. Okay, everybody, so please tune in again, follow, like, subscribe, leave us a little comment. All right. We will arrange for justice to be served. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Goodbye.